Take it away, Jeff.
Okay. Coming down in 3, 2, and 1. Welcome once again to another, how shall we describe it, Franken 31 Thoughts podcast. We recorded a podcast Wednesday afternoon and realized quickly Wednesday night that we need to do an update. So here we are, alongside Elliot Friedman. And we're doing this, Elliot, about an hour after the NHL announces officially that they are suspending the season, going on hiatus. And in the commissioner's words, quote, "Our goal is to resume play as soon as it is appropriate and prudent so that we will be able to complete the season and award the Stanley Cup." Complete the season and award the Stanley Cup. As much as this season is on pause, in the NHL's mind, they plan to finish up some part of a regular season and award the Stanley Cup in the playoffs.
I heard on the conference call today between the commissioner and the various governors, he made that point very quickly and very clearly too. So it's not just a press release statement. It is the message he gave to the top officials from each team that we want to award a Stanley Cup this year. If I could just say one thing to everybody listening to this podcast, you know, today you and me and Amal, our producer, we're at work. We're just in the studio, you and me, with Anthony and Justin.
Yep.
And I will go to our main studios to do the show tonight with Carolyn and Brian. But I think CJ is going to be there too. I am going to take some time off work. I have told our family that we are going to stay home. And, you know, everybody out there, make good choices. I heard that Jim Neal today signed off an interview in Dallas by saying, make good choices. And I don't like to lecture people because I don't like anyone telling me what to do. So I don't like to tell anyone else what to do. But this is an important time. Make good choices. Wash your hands. Stay home as much as you can. Stay out of big public gatherings. We're only going to get through this with the minimal possible damage if we all do it together.
And what I really hope for everyone listening to this podcast right now, is I hope there is a birth rate spike exactly 9 months from today.
Coronavirus babies.
Here they come. At what point on Wednesday did it become obvious to you, Elliot Friedman, that the NHL was going to have to follow suit to what the NBA did Wednesday night?
You know, Jeff, that will go down as one of the most surreal nights of my broadcasting career. And sharing it with you and Brian and our crew in the Toronto studio, Matt Marstrom was there, Kathy Broderick running the show. It was really weird. Like, that to me is the craziest thing about the last 24 hours is how quickly the story changed.
Can I quickly set the scene for people? So
sure.
We're doing the Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey program. It's the Edmonton Oilers and the Winnipeg Jets, and we do the pregame, and of course we have to talk about what's happening with the COVID-19 situation, and so we do an update in the pregame. And then after we do our intro, we mention that, you know, coming up in the first intermission, we'll talk about the Columbus Blue Jackets playing an empty arena game against the Pittsburgh Penguins. San Jose Sharks have empty arena games planned throughout March as well, and that's going to be one of our intermission updates. The minute we get to the green room, the minute we get to Lotus, Elliot's phone starts going Christmas tree. And every couple of moments, Elliot, it was, holy smokes, or oh my gosh, or I can't believe this, or whoa. It was just bombshell after bombshell. The game itself on the screen in front of us became probably nothing more than wallpaper. We're all looking at it, but I'm not sure how many of us, either you, me, or Brian, are really seeing it or really watching it. Because the big story, and it's a Winnipeg Jets final, 4-2, Kyle Connor scores 2 goals, 37 and 38. The big story is what's happening in the NBA and what that means for the NHL. Continue.
Yes, and, you know, that was the thing. Like, you're sitting there, and all of you listening to this, you are following it on social media with the rest of us. Oklahoma City, Utah, game canceled.
And fans, due to unforeseen circumstances, the game tonight has been postponed. You are all safe. And take your time in leaving the arena tonight and do so in an orderly fashion. Thank you for coming out tonight. We are all safe.
Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson announced via Twitter that they have both tested for the disease while in Australia.
Also, since we have been on the air tonight, somebody who you will know by name, Tom Hanks, Academy Award-winning actor Tom Hanks, and his wife, the actress Rita Wilson, have announced that they have both tested positive for coronavirus. Tom Hanks announcing it tonight in a tweet, saying the couple, they're in Australia right now, they began to feel tired, like they had colds, some body aches, slight fever. Rita Wilson apparently additionally had some chills. Quote, Rita had some chills that came and went. Quote, to play things right, as is needed in the world right now, we were tested for the coronavirus and were found to be positive. Well, now, what to do next? The medical officials have protocols that must be followed. We Hankses will be tested, observed, and isolated for as long as public health and safety requires. Not much more to it than a one-day-at-a-time approach. No, we will keep the world posted.
Huge story. Rudy Gobert, very important, influential NBA player, test positive.
As we change the tone of the program here and go into news mode, because the game has been postponed between the Jazz and the Thunder tonight, still awaiting official word from the league office as to exactly why they've determined not to play tonight. Here's scenes earlier tonight. They were about to tip off between the Jazz and the Thunder, and they basically told the teams and the officials to leave the court. And here's what's happening right now. Let's show you some tweets here from Shyam Sharania of The Athletic. Utah Jazz all-star Rudy Gobert has tested positive for coronavirus. The world as we know it here in the NBA has officially changed right now.
That video starts going around of him grabbing all the microphones. Mm-hmm. And then come the tweets, the NBA has suspended its season. You didn't have to be a reporter or a broadcaster like you and I are, Jeff, to be totally rocked by what was happening.
You surprised at how quick that happened, though? Just, and before we get back to NHL,
I was
NBA,
surprised.
Because you follow it and cover it.
I've mentioned that before.
I believe.
I was shocked. I didn't think it would be that fast. And good
it
on them for
quickly.
Doing it.
It was...
Yes. Boy, that escalated quickly. Yes, it sure did. And I was surprised at how fast it came. I think everybody was surprised at how fast it came. Initially, I was shocked that the NHL didn't do it right away, but... Then when you think about it and how surprised we all were, I didn't have a problem with the league, you know, taking a deep breath and saying, let's just do this properly in the morning. Now, I had one person who said to me the thing that bothered him about it was if you had to go to work in some of those arenas, he didn't think that was fair, which I think is a legit point. But I generally felt that I can't blame the league for taking a deep breath and saying, we're going to do this properly, but I wanted to mention that one thing. You know, some of the things I heard during the day, I heard the players are still going to get paid. Obviously, we know now there's going to be no practices. Mm-hmm. The one thing that stood out in their release is it's clear to me that they're expecting a positive test or two. If you look at that release and what they talk about the possibility of players getting tested, they realize that it's going to be impossible that none of their guys were at least exposed to it.
Right.
So, I mean, we're bracing for that. I heard the other thing they talked about was they want to have the cup done. They want to get it awarded this year. And they're open to ideas on what to do when the season resumes. And I don't think anybody knows right now when that's going to be.
A couple of things. The one thing that jumps to mind, Ryan, right away as the NHL made it official earlier on Thursday afternoon that they're putting the league on hiatus is how do you determine that it's safe to go back? Like, at what point do you say, okay, we're in the clear? Like, what are the indicators? What are the markers? Or are you just, not to sound frivolous about it, but are you just following the advice of the medical community and taking their lead? And if they say it's okay to go back, then we go back.
Yes, I do think that's what it's going to be. If you take a look at this, they all announced the media changes at the same time.
Yep.
So they're in lockstep. And you know that they're all going to take the same cues. One might come back before the other.
You think so, hey?
You know, there was a report today that the NBA said minimum 30 days. I would bet you that if another league, maybe even the NHL, gets told you can come back sooner, you're healthy enough to do so, mm-hmm. they may do it. I'm not trying to say the NHL will do that. I think if you see leagues get told, say, in 3 weeks you can come back, it's going to get discussed.
I would imagine, considering the messaging so far, whether it's by way of, you know, how media is supposed to behave now, like everything, and you've made this point on TV here, elsewhere, radio, that the major sports leagues have worked in concert so far with the messaging. And they've all been in contact, all sharing information. My assumption would have been that if the NBA is back, the NHL is back,
well,
for example.
I don't necessarily think that in this particular case. Like, if that report, we're taping this when we're seeing reports that they've been told minimum 30 days.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I haven't seen that yet from the NHL. Like, initially, there was a note that went out, I heard, to the players on Wednesday night, probably 3-week break, and then we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you never know. That could change and things like that. But why was the NBA the first one to cancel on Wednesday?
Because of the player.
Because of the player. Like, their hand was forced. Mm-hmm. They had no choice. They had to be the first one. If the NHL had the first positive test, then they would have been the first one to act. That's just the way it goes. And it's going to come down to what evidence do they get that it's going around the league? What evidence do we get that society's ready to handle this again? All of that stuff. And I do generally think they'll be on the same timeline, but somebody's got to be first. And I'm going to be curious to see who that's going to be.
You know, we're used to the NHL and the Players Association working very adversarially. They sing from the same hymn book in partnership when the mm-hmm. time is appropriate. But was this one of the situations or one of the issues where they really were on the same page and this was a joint decision between both the NHL and the Players Association? Was this a situation where they went into discussions about this with the exact same thing in mind? That we have to do this?
You really have no choice. You have to work together on this because here's the thing. The damages affect both of you. If you're a player, we already know, I don't want to get into it too much because people's eyes glaze over when they hear this. They hate hearing about escrow, right?
Yeah.
This is going to hurt their escrow. The players are still going to be getting paid and no revenues are going to be coming in. That's a problem. Okay? So the players already know that the thing that drives them the craziest is going to be affected. So that's
now in our minds, we should all recalibrate what the cap is going to be because coming out of the GM's meetings, it was 84 to 88.
Let me get to that.
Okay.
So the first problem right now is escrow.
Okay.
It's not a good sign for the players, but yes. And so let's get to the cap. The cap is 81.5. They estimate 84 to 88. Some people are already skeptical on that. They're probably not hitting it now. And if the playoffs are damaged, that's where they make their most money. Like, I've had guys estimate that we're talking about between $700 million and $1 billion here, okay? Mm-hmm. The NHL last year was a $5 billion league. So they're talking about a pretty significant number, if that's correct. So we're not getting to 84 to 88. We're going to be lower. But, you know, so the players are going to be like, uh-oh. But also the teams are going to be thinking, uh-oh. Now, the league will want to protect its teams to some degree. They're not going to want teams saying, I got to buy out 6 guys now.
Right.
So they will negotiate. If they have to, they will work together to negotiate something. And I've made this point a couple times now. 2011-12, cap was $64.3 million. Yep. 12-13 was a lockout, and they struck a deal that the next full season, which was 13-14, the cap was going to be 64-3 no matter what. I bet you they come to some kind of a deal so that everybody gets hurt, mm-hmm. but nobody needs to be destroyed. And everybody, the damage is mitigated as much as they can. The other thing that's going to be a factor here, because I've already had some agents reaching out to me about it, is I think insurance is going to be a big issue for the NHL. I don't think there's as much coverage there as they would have liked. I heard it's less than they would have liked. But the players don't get a part of that. Mm-hmm. That's separate from HRR. So, I mean, there are going to be battles here, but it's in their best interest to give each other a soft landing.
The NHL, by way of the press release, has indicated they are interested in coming back and playing some regular season games before the playoffs. Is there a concern that the reduced schedule itself might take some teams out who otherwise would be in the playoff hunt. Here's my question. Do you think the league would be sensitive to teams that are technically still involved in a race to the playoffs, leaving enough runway for them to play games to get in so the schedule itself doesn't eliminate them automatically?
I have to tell you,
like, I wonder about Arizona, a team like Arizona.
One player whose team is on the cusp of the playoffs that did not get, is not in right now, texted me that very question. He said, "We are going to vote against anything that costs us the playoffs out of this."
Yeah.
So here is the Elliot Friedman solution. The
okay, NHL, everybody lean back, put your feet up. This might be a whopper.
The NHL wants creative solutions, and I think they should invite creative solutions. This is a chance for them to create, because when this ends, and hopefully it ends soon, people are going to be starving for sports of all kinds.
Yes.
So you have an opportunity to do something special. Do it. Here's what it is.
Okay.
Eastern Conference playoffs. First round buys. Boston, Tampa, Toronto, Washington, Philly, Pittsburgh.
So they're the no revenue club.
Why are you ruining things?
Because you love me.
Go away. Western buys. St. Louis, Colorado, Dallas, Vegas, Edmonton, Vancouver. Points percentage. First round of the playoffs. Tweet at me if I get this wrong. I did the quick math, okay? I was told there'd be no math. Carolina Rangers, Islanders Columbus, Western, Calgary Arizona, Nashville Minnesota. So in those matchups, Carolina Rangers, Islanders Columbus, Calgary Arizona, Nashville Minnesota, two games, higher seeded team gets both of them at home. Back-to-back nights, total goals. First game, if it's a tie, fine. Second game, still a tie, sudden death. That's how we do the playoffs.
All right, buddy.
All right, Elliot.
Tell me when you're ready.
All right, ready. Do it.
Okay, insert here. Our wonderful producer, Amal Delich, reached out to me and said, Elliot, your math is terrible. You got some of the teams wrong. So this is what I figured. I wanted to keep this idea in the podcast because I think it's a good idea. There's at least one owner and several other presidents and some GMs who've been pushing this idea. So Amal gave me a choice. I could take it all out or I could keep it in. I kept it in. I'm sorry the teams are wrong. Thursday was a crazy day. So I apologize for getting the math wrong. I just want the idea in there. Now, Anthony Stewart made a really good point on our Thursday night show as we talked about the current suspension of the season. Who's next in the East? Rangers. Who's two teams away in the West? Chicago, Arizona. Before Chicago. Do you not think in a year where revenue is going to be cut a bit, the NHL and the players won't want the possibility of a playoff game or two involving the Rangers in Chicago? I do too. So I could see this possibly getting opened up even more. Who's the next team in the East after the Rangers? You guys do the math. It's either Buffalo or Montreal. So I do think you are going to see, if possible, some creative idea that could get up to 24 teams. And let me leave you with this. One GM said to me he would love to see a March Madness tournament in June. What do you think about that? Back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
How open is the NHL to all of these ideas?
I think the NHL will at least listen. I think they realize this is different. And if there's ever a time to try the format that Gary Bettman hates, it's now.
Okay, so pick your opponent.
You know what? I got to tell you.
I know you hate it.
I don't hate it. If you're ever going to do it, this is the year. But there's no way they're going to do that. No way.
Anything else to add before we get back to our regularly scheduled podcast?
We're all in the same boat here. Let's make good decisions so we can all come back and watch hockey and everything else as quickly as possible.
It's okay. It's just hockey. Go to the library, get a book, go for a walk, take your dog out for a little bit more of a walk, go for a run, hit the gym again, reintroduce yourself to your partner.
Here's something I'm going to try that's unique.
What's that?
I'm going to talk to my wife.
Oh, but will she talk back to you?
I don't know. It's undetermined.
That is the big question. We'll find out when 31 Thoughts, the podcast, returns. In the meantime, we will now present the podcast we recorded Wednesday for your enjoyment. Thanks for putting up with us here. 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by the GMC Sierra Trucks.
Just nauseating.
So good.
So the reason I'm saying just nauseating is because Jeff, he got his suit jacket caught on his cufflinks, which there's some poetic justice in all of this. His suit jacket does not want to come off because it doesn't want to put on what he's going to put on. So I see the McDonald's uniform of the Guelph Griffins.
Not a good look. I remember you made me stare at you when you had the Western jersey on for an entire podcast. There's your Queen's Cup champions right there. Beat Western en route to beating the Ottawa GGs.
You know, the universe.
I want to thank Justin Stevens, by the way, at Guelph Griffins for sending this wonderful jersey along and the entire coaching staff. And congratulations to the Guelph Griffins, my alma mater.
Well, I hate to admit this, but congratulations to Guelph. You earned it. That thing looks disgusting.
You're lucky I don't ask you to put it on.
Can I have a Big Mac combo, please? Would you like to supersize that, Jeff Bass? No, no, no. I'll just take the regular sizes.
A gorgeous Griffin.
What would you like to drink?
Jersey.
I don't know who our sponsor is, so I'm not going
to
say you want
to. Good enough to play for, but always admired. Would you say that if it was noted Griffin Cassie Campbell Pascal wearing this jersey right now?
Absolutely, I would.
You would not. You would roast Cass?
100%. If she put on that gross jersey that made her look like a McDonald's employee, I'd be doing the same thing.
What self-respecting hockey player from Western
and I want to say this.
Guelph to defeat
I am not knocking McDonald's employees. I don't believe you make fun of anybody's job. Everybody works hard. I just rip Guelph. That's all.
This really burned you, didn't it? This really got into you.
The colors kept you up. So disgusting. Okay, let's start the podcast.
You don't like yellow. You don't like black. You don't like red.
Not altogether.
I just like purple and white. Purple is the crown chakra, man. It's your brain. All right, let's get to the podcast. You start the 31 Thoughts blog this week by talking about and talking to Jim Montgomery. How was that conversation?
So I should explain all this. Someone reached out to me last week and said, would you be willing to talk to Jim? And I said, for sure. And there were really no ground rules. They just said, would you be willing to talk to him? And I said, yes. And they said, okay, he'll call you at this such and such a time. And he did. And the only thing he said was, I'm not talking about the incident. You know, my first question was, how are you? I think that's the obvious first question. Sure. And I asked him specifically about the incident. He said, I'm not talking about that. But I'll talk to you about everything else. And there wasn't another question he sort of threw away. Although he made it clear he's going to look forward more than he's going to look back. And towards the end of the conversation, I thought about it. I formulated some thoughts. I wrote some things out and I sent him a note and I said, is there any chance that Emily would talk to me? And I thought the answer would be no.
Emily's his wife.
Yes. And I thought the answer would be no, but I was surprised, pleasantly surprised. It's like the old Gretzky line. You don't score on the shots you don't take. Actually, her children were at a movie when she called. So I didn't take up too much time. I wanted her to join the kids at the movie. And, I didn't write this because I didn't want to interject myself into the story. I thought this was more of a podcast thing. In the blog, I thought it was more Jim and Emily Montgomery's story. The podcast, where they're not on as guests, obviously, I thought it would be better to tell this. One of the things that Jim Montgomery and I talked about was he was in Montreal, where his family is, when I screwed up the race at Rio. And he said that he was watching and he saw, you know, I apologized later and I took the blame for it. And he said that one of the reasons that he reached out to speak to me was that he thought that that was the right way to handle it. So in myself doing that, he said, that's what I'm going to do with this, which I thought was interesting. And I really didn't want to share that, but I thought it was reasonable. If we're going to be blunt and honest about everything here, I felt I should do that. The second thing that, you know, we kind of talked about between him and I, the effect that when things like this happen to you in public, the effect it has on your families. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going into this a lot, but I think one of the reasons I really struggled broadcasting after that race is because I was very frightened about the effect it would have on my family. You worry about your career. You know your family is, you know, you're married. If you ever have a bad day on the air, your wife struggles with it as much as you do. And so we talked about that in our conversation. And I wrote about how much shame and guilt he felt that his family had to go through this with him. That's similar to the way I felt when I made that mistake, because you're a continent away, basically. I'm in Brazil. My family's in Toronto. And you worry about the impact it's going to have on, you know, my wife and my son. And he talked about his wife and his four kids. So for people who are wondering sort of, you know, how the conversation kind of came to be and went, a lot of it had to do with those things. But Jeff, I think that obviously Jim Montgomery's trying to change his life. You know, I didn't really tell a lot of people that we spoke in advance of publishing it, but I told a couple. And the first thing that, you know, one of them said to me was, I hope he can keep his family together. And obviously him and Emily are committed to doing that. And, you know, I wish them all the best. I think it's when you go through things like this publicly, it can really, especially in this social media age, it spreads so quick, it takes its toll. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated the both of them being honest, especially Emily admitting that she was mad at Jim for a while. But I wish them all the best. They've got four kids, yep. And that's all anybody cares about. And I'm glad to see they're working to make it work.
We live in a culture right now where, it's been described, and rightfully so, as disposable culture.
Mm-hmm.
And the default in our culture right now is if something is broken, you throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
And I always applaud people who don't throw things away, but try to fix them. Fixing things is difficult, and you know that it's broken in the back of your mind forever, for the remainder. But, as we talked about a few weeks ago here on this podcast, Hemingway, and I'm going to badly paraphrase him here, said, you know...
Does this count as a philosopher, by the way?
Ernest Hemingway isn't a philosopher. He's a writer, thank you very much.
Drink.
He wrote very tight prose as well. To paraphrase Hemingway, you know, life breaks all of us. And for some people, we're eventually strongest where we are broken. So if you can keep it together, the place where you are broken, for some people, and certainly for some couples that go through therapy, that can be, that negative can turn into a positive, and that can be one of the strongest bonds that you do have. So I applaud Jim and Emily for what they're doing.
Let me ask you, because, you know, I wrote it. I'm obviously attached to it. I'll tell you, I sent it to one person. I sent it to Chris Johnston before it was published. I just wanted him to have a read through it and see what he thought. What did you think reading it?
I thought, good for Jim and good for Emily. Well, first of all, I was surprised when I first saw it because I didn't know that you had spoken to Jim. I thought a lot of it was, I don't want to say predictable because that's too frivolous a word, but it looks like Jim Montgomery is going through the right steps to fix things and to reintegrate himself back to his family and into his career. I got some great advice from Lou Skeezus, who I used to work with at 640 when I worked at Chorus. It's when he was working at ROB TV. I can't remember what we were talking about. I think it was about something about messing up on the air or something like that. And he said, look, here's the simple rule. when you mess up, fess up, and dress up. That's how you do it.
It's good advice.
And I read your piece this morning when you sent it to me before it was published today at sportsnet.ca, and I said, this is what Jim Montgomery is doing. He messed up, he's fessing up, and now he's dressing up, and that's why he reached out to you and is starting to tell his story. And no one does, everyone's got a different timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wouldn't shock me if, you know, we didn't hear from Jim Montgomery for 2 years and then all of a sudden there's a conversation with Elliot Friedman. Everyone does it on their own time.
Yes.
Some will look at that and say, well, that's pretty quick. How much, you know, therapy could they have done? How much healing could they have done in this process? Because it seems as if Jim is looking to get back to some type of normalcy. Everyone's got different timelines.
Mm-hmm.
And what's right for you is not right for me, is not right for Emil, but what's right for Emil is not right. You know what I'm trying to get at here. And it seems as if right now, from talking to you about it and from reading your piece this morning, that he's taken some necessary steps and he is on his way to a place where, hopefully, fingers crossed, because you always root for the goodness of people to come
out.
Root
for success.
And you root for people to keep things together and to heal together as a couple and as a family. It looks like he is on that road. And for that, I'm happy. Like, at the end of all this, who cares about hockey? Who cares about sports? Sports is a way we just learn how to, you know, walk each other home and talk to one another and think about each other. Good for Jim. That's the best thing I can say about all this. Good for Jim.
When he told me he was interested in getting back into coaching, I admit that part of me wondered, is this a good thing? And that's why I was happy I got a chance to talk to Emily, mm-hmm. because I could ask her, are you sure this is good? And she seemed comfortable with it. I have a line that I use about Steph, my wife, and I say, you know what she always says, the less I see you, the more I love you. And she actually used that line, basically, I'd like him a lot more if I saw him a little less.
Yeah.
And I was laughing to her on the phone, and I told her, and she was laughing too, and I told her that my wife uses a similar line. As long as Emily is okay with that, then I'm good with that. I admit, when Jim Montgomery first told me he was thinking of coaching again, I was like, oh, I don't know if this is the right idea. I was thinking about it. But the fact that she's on board, that's critical. And you mentioned something important there, and that's normalcy. And, you know, obviously, I think he's around his family a lot. He's trying to be a better husband. He's trying to be a better father. But I think it's very hard to do that if you can't show some self-worth. Mm-hmm. You can't help support your family, help do the things that make you happy. And it's clear that coaching makes him very happy. He's really enjoying being around his boys who play now. His older of two daughters, Ava, is now starting to skate. He's helping her skate. It's clear he loves that,
mm-hmm.
and he needs it.
You know, the one thing through all of it, not that this relates necessarily to Jim and Emily and the Montgomerys, I don't think we put enough value in talking to old people and talking to old couples. You know, I'm always amazed, you know, when you see this couple's been married for 16 years. This couple's been together since they were 8 years old. And we just sort of shrug it off and say, wow, what a wonderful story. But we never really talk about why it worked, and how it worked, and what were the challenges through all of it. Like, very seldom do we ever talk to old people about anything other than major historical moments in their lives, which don't necessarily have anything to do with them. It's always the remember when story, or where were you when this happened? I don't think we talk to old people enough. I really don't. They can tell you all these things. And maybe it's just a byproduct of me getting older, and I find more wisdom in talking to older people once I realize that I don't have anything figured out, but maybe they do. I wouldn't spend any time talking to him. Because you know what? Those couples, those older couples that were together for 60 years, you don't think any of them have any wisdom for Jim Montgomery and his wife, Emily?
I'm thinking of, and this is really going to date me, this is going to bring out the okay boomer part of the conversation. When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
All those old couples in the movie who talk about being together.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking of as you're talking about this.
Okay, boomer. Moving on. Anything else about the Montgomerys?
No, is there anything else you want? I mean,
No, I was happy to see it.
I was so, I was so wrapped in it. Like, it's one of those things, Jeff, where you send it and you give it to the editors and you're thinking, I have no idea what to think of this. I've spent so much time overthinking every word.
Yeah.
Because you want to do it properly. You want to do it honestly. And you also, I admit, feel a responsibility that you have to tell their story properly because they came to you to do it.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what to think when that got published. My head was in 50 different directions.
I'll tell you why I was happy to see it. Because as you well know, in hockey, listen, in life, this isn't just exclusive to sports or the sport that we cover. But how many times do we joke about things like, oh, that guy's paying 50% escrow. You know, he's been divorced. Oh, he's got the 50% escrow. Oh, this guy's got two divorces. He's on his third wife now. And, you know, this industry is littered with broken marriages and kids all over the place. Many times I feel it's because people didn't try to fix things. And sometimes things aren't fixable. And sometimes it's just better that people are apart. I was happy that these two were trying to fix things.
Yeah, I agree. Life's hard.
Hemingway's right.
Yeah.
Life breaks you.
Hope it works out for them. Rooting for the Montgomerys.
Breaks all of us. Okay, Tampa-Boston last Saturday.
Great game.
We talked about the Battle of Alberta earlier on this season. That was fantastic. And I'm watching this thing and I'm saying to myself, I don't know if the Tampa Bay Lightning last season could have had a game like that.
You know what stuck out to me was Jay Feaster's tweet.
Yes.
Jay Feaster, who won a Stanley Cup there as the general manager in 2004, he tweets out after the game about how all those guys have made them different. Goodrow, Maroon, Sergachev, and he wrote, who knew? And he said that this is what this team needed. And he basically calls them nastier and edgier. And even without the fighting, teams have noticed they're nastier and edgier, and they want you to know that they're nastier and edgier.
Does it not seem to you
that's Cirelli cross-check?
Tchara?
Oh, we're going to go back to that one, Jack. That puck was across the goal line, even though the referee
they
was
sounded adamant. The siren, which means that Toronto has seen a goal. And now Pat Maroon wants to go, of course.
And then Cirelli came in behind with a cross-check.
All right. It's time to settle things down. Corrali manhandles Killorn. You take your Harvard degree and take it to the hospital. Now Braden Point. Now it's Cirelli. On top of Coyle. And Chara's squaring off with Maroon, saying, do you want to see the afterlife? I'll take you there. Maroon gets the takedown.
There's going to be some revenge at some point on that one.
Oh, he's just going to lift his stick up and throw it up in the air, right? Because that's what Chara does now. That's his, no, it's going to be worse for Cirelli. It almost seemed as if Julien Brisebois this year said to himself, what can I do for this team that will let us compete with two teams specifically? One we saw on Saturday, the Boston Bruins, and two, the Washington Capitals. If you're going to meet them in the playoffs, those are going to be physical series.
Yep.
It's almost as if Brisebois went about this year and said, okay, what can I do to address the Boston issue and the Washington issue?
I think also what it says is that he did feel his team needed a lot more edge, that they were easily pushed around. So I don't even know if it's the Boston issue or the Washington issue, because last year it was a Columbus issue, and Columbus pushed them around. And I think that is
a... Did they quit? Did you feel like Tampa quit?
I don't like the word quit.
I don't like it either, but that's one of the things we kept hearing. Oh, man, I can't believe Tampa quit like that.
I
hate using it.
My belief is Columbus ripped the heart out of them. Ripped the heart out of them. After the first period of that game won, Tampa thought they're going to win that series in two games.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? You know what the move of the playoff was? Tortorella putting Bobrovsky back in.
Yes. Well, Korpisalo on the bench didn't look like he wanted to go in, but... Quit, I think quit is a tough word, but they beat their heart out of them. They ripped it right out.
Yeah.
So I think what Tampa is saying is that we've got enough skill. We need a bit more will. And also, we don't want to wait for you to get our ire up. We're going to have our ire up right away, and we're coming at you.
Preemptive.
Preemptive.
We're going to be preemptively angry.
Yes.
Jeff Gordon, Chris Drury contract extensions. I'm a big fan, I think we all are, of Jeff Gordon and the work that he's done with the Rangers, even previous to that, how he set up the Boston Bruins, and they're still dining out from the Chara decision, the Rask decision, the drafting Brad Marchand. Like, he was only there in that role a short time, but did a world of good for the Boston Bruins. Of course, rewarded now for his work with the New York Rangers as a general manager. And if you lined up 10 general managers and Jeff Gordon was one of them, and you took 20 hockey fans and said, tell me which one is the Rangers GM, who could identify him?
It's funny you said that, because somebody sent me a note saying, is there a more lower profile, yes, big market GM in sports?
Hmm.
And the only thing I said is, in football, some of the GMs are totally overshadowed by the coaches, and the coaches have a lot of power in football. So maybe you would pick some names out of there. But generally, I think the answer to that question would be no, you can't. And Gordon likes...
Masai Ujiri technically isn't the GM of the Raptors.
Okay, let's talk about the person who makes the decisions. Sure. And Bobby Webster, he's not low profile anymore. No. He's a big name. Jeff Gordon likes that, and I think the Rangers like that.
Why is that? It's New York. Everything's got to be larger than life.
No, I think the Rangers...
It's got to be big personalities. John Davidson is there.
Well, when they had to come out, unfortunately, an update with the accident,
yep,
and thankfully everybody is okay, Shestorkin's back, John Davidson was the one who made the announcement. So maybe they like him being that guy. I don't think Jeff Gordon's got too many complaints that he doesn't do too many interviews.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the job that he's done?
I think he's done a great job. And Drury's a smart guy. He's going to be a GM at some point. He's going to get a chance to pick his situation. Obviously, he's been picky. You know, Minnesota could have been there for him. Buffalo could have been there for him. He's waited. Nothing wrong with being patient and waiting. How can you not like what Gordon's done there? There were a lot of people who didn't think an extension for him was in the cards a year or two ago. The way the Rangers were going, when they threw in the towel
and said rebuilding.
Mm-hmm. But they had a plan. And the other thing too is we've talked about this, they made their plan clear. And Panarin accelerated it, but Zibanejad,
40 goals.
D'Angelo. You know, they found some guys
Fox
who were players.
Good move. Like, you go right down the list. Like, I know that everyone's going to dump on the Rangers for Elias Anderson, and that.
But we all have our misses, right?
But that's fine. But we don't even know that it's a.
Still young.
That's the thing. I always pull up before I say, "Yeah, it's a miss," or "Oh, that's a dud." We still don't know.
That's fair.
About
still young kid
Elias Anderson, but things right now are looking great.
Who thought they were going to be on the edge of the playoff race this year?
Who thought they'd be on the edge of a playoff race this year and not have Henrik Lundqvist as a factor?
Mm-hmm.
Is a big one too. Like, if I told you when they wrote that letter that, you know what, Friedge, in a couple of years, they're going to be knocking on the playoff door again and Lundqvist will not be a big part of it.
By the way, we had him at the beginning of the year and we talked about the respect we had for him, that he carried himself and when they were losing.
Yeah.
He's been unbelievable again this year.
Yeah.
This is not easy for him. And you know, inside it's killing him. He's handled himself incredible.
Do you think he makes it easy for the Rangers in the offseason?
I think they'll all work to get it done. He'll either get traded somewhere or they're going to buy him out so he can go wherever he wants.
Okay, so a couple hours ago here, as we record this podcast on Wednesday afternoon, we sat down with Hal Gill. We thought it was going to be a cozy 15-minute chat with the former NHLer turned broadcaster with the Nashville Predators. It turned into, how long was it, Amel? About an hour and 15 minutes, an hour and 20 minutes. Some great stories. We're going to package the whole thing up as a feature podcast.
You'll like the part where Brian Burke kicks me out of my chair and takes over the interview.
Brian Burke wanders in the studio and Elliot punts and Berkey takes over the interview. That was a lot of fun. One of the reasons why I wanted to talk to Hal Gill specifically was the relief efforts after the tornado damage in Nashville, which he played a part of. So when we come back, you'll hear from former NHL defenseman turned Nashville Predators analyst Hal Gill. 31 Thoughts, the podcast returns. We're on an island.
outside of the fence. Verona's crying, but the water is fine, and we watch it
This month, our feature band is Toronto-based Mute Choir. Before the break, you heard Fences. Now, you're hearing This House from their debut record.
This house. This house is Cage Man. This house. There's a reason I'm drinking again. In this house. Conspirators live. This house. This house is a bear trap, but quite possibly more painful. She's a vampire, and it's taken my soul.
Okay, Wednesday afternoon, Elliot and I sat down with Hal Gill, former NHL defenseman, now doing both radio and television for the Nashville Predators. It was supposed to be a cozy 15-minute chat. It turned into a sprawling 1 hour and 20-minute full-on conversation. We will present the entire thing to you on a future edition of 31 Thoughts, the podcast. In the meantime, wanted to play this clip from it. This is Hal Gill talking about his efforts in the tornado relief efforts in Nashville. Enjoy. Tornado relief, one of the things we know now about Hal Gill more so than ever, you're good with a chainsaw.
I love a chainsaw. And if you've never had a chainsaw in your hand and felt the rush of, you know, I mean, yeah, I get geeked out, and I spent a lot of after I retired, spent a lot of time with the chainsaw and the smell of the gas burning and wood burning up and just trees falling and gets me going. So yeah, they gave me a chainsaw in Nashville and helped me take down some trees for some people that needed some help. So it was fun doing that.
We talked about how great a teammate you were. So no surprise that right away when the situation with the tornadoes happened in Nashville, right away it was without hesitation, Hal Gill's on the scene.
I wish it was just Hal Gill on the scene. I'm part of a group. So Seven Element is actually the name of the group. It's a veteran that was a hockey guy and started getting a hockey group together and playing. And he went from 15 to 20 guys to now they're up over 800
oh, wow.
veterans, first responders that go out and play hockey. And so Chris Mason and I are bag chuckers. We kind of said, we're going to help these guys out. We sold some t-shirts to raise money for them and had a good time. But more importantly than helping them, it's been awesome to have them reach out to us. I mean, these guys are our heroes, and you know, as soon as something bad happens, they're the first on the scene. Mm-hmm. And so they called us, so we were with them taking a tree off of a garage and trying to help out, and they camped out and stayed overnight and mm-hmm. and got going in the morning again. So we went out there for the day, but then we're on the road again. But it was awesome to help those guys out. And there's so much need for help. And you don't understand all the things. These tornadoes just come through and, you know, rip up someone's house. And then the house next to it is fine. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Schools are down. There's billions of dollars of damage. And so to help out with one guy, you know, his insurance company wouldn't come look at his car because there's a tree on top of it. So he can't get the tree off. You know, you can't just call someone as a tornado goes through and says, hey, get the tree off, because everyone's busy. You know, it's backlogged. So, you know, we went over and helped out, and it was nice to be part of that help to recover.
NashvilleLockerRoom.com.
You can go on NashvillePredators.com/NashvilleStrong is another one you can go on.
Yes. NashvillePredators.com/NashvilleStrong.
Yeah, if you go on their website, they can.
And you can also
also
volunteer there as well. This isn't just for donations. This is
HON.org, hands-on.org. HON.org is a good one. There's so much that's involved with, there's so much loss and it's tragedy, but it just, the uphill road to build. And you know what? It's awesome, especially in the hockey community. Nashville is a music city, and the musicians are all getting ready to donate and to do charity concerts. And so you expect that. What was really awesome for us as Predators, you know, the contributions from NHL teams, from owners that
Craig
really
Leopold, Minnesota.
He stepped up and he has ties there. But I feel like Nashville has become part of that hockey community.
It's a big success.
It's
Nashville,
a huge,
is one of the biggest successes in the NHL.
And everyone has a great time coming there. And, you know, I think that it's no kidding that the 2017 Cup run, it really was on the map. Everyone saw how great of a hockey city this is. But it really is nice and humbling to have so many people contribute in the hockey world. So I thank them for doing that and look forward to more people embracing Nashville as a hockey town.
That's Hal Gill, Nashville analyst. You'll hear the full podcast on an upcoming edition of 31 Thoughts. The website again, NashvillePredators.com/NashvilleStrong, if you can help. Now, I wanted to get, and Elliot did as well, some Ask 31s in. Not going to happen this week. Apologies. It's been a crazy day. I'm sure you understand. We will make it up to you. You know, as a matter of fact, we should probably just do an entire podcast of just Ask 31s. Why not? Let's do it. I want to thank Hal Gill for stopping by the podcast today. We're taking you out with our monthly feature band, Mute Choir. The Toronto-based trio just released their debut record, Silent Conversations, and just kicked off their Western Canadian tour, hitting up Winnipeg, Regina, Red Deer, Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, and a few more stops as well. With Shadowboxing, here's Mute Choir on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.